Hello, dear heart. Welcome to the Flourishing Practitioners podcast, where we talk all things about space holding, caring for our clients, and succeeding in our businesses. We explore the wisdom from coaches, counselors, and healers. My name's Gabrielle Walker, and I'm so honored that you're here. Let's dive in.
Hello, beautiful beings. I hope that you enjoy this podcast with Sarah McCrum, the author of Love Money, Money Loves You. She has gifted us with a link to the first four chapters of the book. So I really encourage you to tap into this energy, these words, these thoughts, the way this book has interwoven with my thinking has really uplifted the way that I view money and the way that I interact in relationship to money as well. I know that for many of us who are holistic practitioners, who do Māori healing, pūtea, money, thinking about these things can at times feel really heavy.
Or we can be feeling other people's views of money. And I really love how Sarah talks about it as a relationship. In a way, we're dating each other. Money and us are connecting and finding out how we feel. We're learning to voice our needs more. We're learning to set our vibration well when some of that loving energy isn't flowing. And coming out of the Miri Miri Wānanga this weekend, something that really struck me was the beauty of all the textures of love and safe touch. And so I'll add safe money to that. There's a way that we can be safe for ourselves, our community, and all those we work with as well, so that people feel nourished and held and the exchange is clear. I also really enjoyed in this how Sarah pointed out that at times our relationship can feel wobbly, but that doesn't mean that the love has gone away.
Our ability as healers to step in and own our own money relationship allows us to have a healthier relationship with our community, with our practice, and with the purity and clarity of our offerings. Because if we're safe and held in our own essence, in our own homes, in our own needs, in our own wants, then we are not projecting those onto our clients, and the energy between us can be quite clear. This has become clearer and clearer the more that I train and teach that money is something we can't not have a conversation about, and it's something I really like talking about as well. So that would have been really surprising to pass me of a few years ago. I was still really scared to have these conversations. I was still really influenced by other people's views. That occasionally still happens, but for the most part, I feel really nurtured and held in the evolution of finding a way to support myself, but also be open to receiving and giving and sharing onwards. I feel like if you step into the healing space, you're naturally always going to be a giver in some capacity, otherwise you wouldn't be called to it. Yet that flow, ebb and flow of how we support ourselves and support our clients is always a part of the equation, so we can't ignore the conversation.
I hope this beautiful conversation serves you. Ngā mihi. Hello everyone, we are here today with Sarah McCrum. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Sarah is the author of Love Money, Money Loves You, and this is focused on combining well-being, true wealth, and creating impact with integrity. Something that has drawn me towards you is your groundedness with how you're doing this, and I've really enjoyed, I think I wrote to you in the first email where I reached out that I spent my partner about 4 hours drive from Perth, so I spent a lot of time listening to you, so I feel like I know you, but you're still just connecting with me. I came across your work shortly after I purchased my first home. So I went in that vibrational shift from renting and flowing with money in that way, and then having almost reaching this like stagnant standstill. So yeah, and I was really excited to share you with our community because yeah, money, well-being, all these sorts of ways of viewing it is so supportive for all of those who practice with healing and holistic practices and things like that. That's part of what drew me towards you. But as we start, is there anything sitting with you in this moment that you feel is most relevant for you that you would want to share with our community? It can be anything.
Well, actually, just listening to you speak, I feel that, first of all, It is challenging in our current economy for people who are holistic practitioners and healers. When you look at the value of the work we do, which is enormous, and you look at the value of it in the economy, which is generally very small, it's not considered to be highly valuable work, which is why it is often a challenge for people to make good money, which we deserve if we're doing a good job. And then, of course, when that's a challenge, that can easily affect our well-being. So to me, to bring together well-being, and I talk about true wealth because I think it's not just about money. It's about having a wealthy life, a rich life, and feeling really alive. To me, these are incredibly important topics in this particular community.
Yeah, I adore that. To give an overview for those listening, because like me, they haven't devoured your content. What would your description be of that relationship that we have to money or wealth?
Can I give a little bit of the backstory of how I come to be able to answer this question?
Yes, of course.
I had a business failure in 2010, and it was exceptionally difficult, and it left me without any money at all, you know, really unable to pay the rent. And I was given a little book which had exercises at the end of the chapters, and one of the exercises said, "What would money like to say to you?" Which was a bit of an odd question in a way. But I was journaling and my pen started writing on the page and it wrote this message, and it was literally like the energy of money was speaking to me. Probably for your audience, that makes sense. For many people, it doesn't. And the first thing it said was, "I would like to tell you to love me." And then it went on and it said, "I'm an energy. I'm very powerful and beautiful." And it indicated that fundamentally it's here to connect human beings together in our creativity and in our contribution. And it ended that first message, which was about two pages in my notebook, and it said, "Don't wait, just take me, I will love you." So my relationship with money, and it really doesn't matter whether money's flowing very generously, which it has done and does at some times, or whether it's a bit tighter, my relationship is fundamentally based in love and the expectation and knowing of love in that relationship. Knowing that money is always there, is always present. It doesn't mean it's just, "Come on, here you are, Sarah, you're going to win the lottery." It doesn't operate on a lottery mentality at all. But my opportunity is to open to that in a way that has integrity for me. And for me, that's been a very, very big piece, is to learn what has integrity, what feels right and is also right for my business and is right for me. And when things can get out of integrity, which, you know, they do from time to time, it's always harder and it's always a call to greater integrity. So for me, my relationship, it's like, in a way, it's up to me because I know money's there. It's not like a difficult husband who, you know, might disappear or might not love me very much. It's more that I'm the difficult one. It's sometimes I can get moody with money, or, you know, I can feel like, "Oh, I'm not good enough for you," or these things that come up, these old patterns that come up, and that affects my relationship with money. And so I've learned enough actually from being married to know that if I notice something like that, I know what to do. I know how to get myself into a better space. And I need to do that because that's what makes a relationship closer. So my relationship with money, and I think our relationship with money, it's really a relationship. And I bring to it what I bring to all my relationships, which is me, with the good parts and the not so good parts. So it's a beautiful reflection also of who am I and how am I approaching this very loving, generous energy that is always present in my life and is always available if I make myself genuinely available to it.
Oh, I love that. I remember hearing that you had done a lot of holistic or energetic work yourself. Is that correct? Do you want to say a little bit about that so people know?
Yes. I spent 22 years training with Chinese masters. So that was really learning about energy and how to use energy to solve problems and change, do things, achieve things, do what you want to do. So my whole life is built around that work because it was so long. But it's 35 years now since I started that. So I am just steeped in ways of energy, of well-being, of spirituality, of healing, of all kinds of problem solving using very unconventional approaches, my whole life centers around that.
Thank you. Thank you. And so at this point, how do you feel your relationship? So I just want to pinpoint here for those listening back, there's heaps of different podcasts and things that you can listen about Sarah and her journey, which I encourage you to look up. So I'm sort of jumping off into questions after those. How would you describe that the way you view money and wealth has changed over the last year for you?
Over the last year? Well, that's a really interesting question, actually, because it's been a challenging year for me. More challenging than previous years. And that doesn't faze me particularly because, you know, it's like health. You can learn all about healing, which I have done. I've managed my own health, you know, with very little help for 30 years. But it doesn't mean my health is the same all the time. It can go up and down, but I have ways of dealing with it. So it's been quite a challenging year because I have two businesses, and one of them has been very demanding financially and taking money out of the other one, basically. So it means my other one is really under pressure all the time because it's actually having to pay for two businesses. That's a decision I consciously made. And at the same time, it's not nearly as easy as it is to run a single profitable business, which I would have if I only had one business. So my relationship with money in that way, what I have learned this last year at one level is how to keep engaging with money. I've not been able to get lazy about it or complacent in any way. I've had to really stay on it all the time. And actually, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, you know, do I have to? Can't you? You know, you can get into that. Like, can't you just give me a break here? But I don't really indulge that kind of thinking because I've been around this for too long. And I know that when things are challenging for me, there is an upgrade in process. It's beginning. Things are beginning to move, just beginning. You know, almost like I could say today, I said to my team just an hour ago, I can see money, which is a different level of money. Because, you know, obviously, like I'm managing all the time, I'm traveling at the moment. And so I'm okay. But I can see this next level of money. We were trying to figure out, is it on the path? Is it the end of the tunnel? Wherever it is, I can actually see it. And that I know is the upgrade, because it's the beginning of the other business finding its place in the financial world. And that's really significant. And I tell this story in a bit of detail because everybody thinks that because I teach about money, I'm just fantabulously wealthy. But I'm actually probably fantabulously real. You know, I've made my decisions about my business. Some of them have had challenging consequences. Some of them have had wonderful consequences. And I'm constantly on this search of well-being and wealth, doing what I love to do and really, really care about. And it has its great times financially, and it has its growing, I would call them growing times financially. And I've definitely been in a growing time. So.
I love that, yeah. That description of that growth and that realness, because sometimes we can get caught up in the how things look or appear rather than sort of sitting with what's present for us. That actually pings my next question around being in relationship with your partner or however, and uniting in that relationship to money. What would you suggest for us in that? Because that's been a challenge for me at different times with my partner. And when I speak, he's pretty open, but, you know, so occasionally if I'm speaking about some of this stuff, he's like, oh, gee, like it's too much.
So, you're just going too far, yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if there's any ways we can unite on those sorts of things, or what you would suggest.
Your human partner.
Me and my human partner, but also any partners and partnership and business and that connection with the money as well.
The first advice that I would give, which is really learned through experience, is get your own connection with yourself and your own connection with money working well. I think that very often we expect our partner and business partners as well to kind of do that for us, and it doesn't work. So what I've learned over and over again is that I need to get myself right. I need my relationship with myself. I need to really love myself. And that means loving the parts of myself that I don't love, if that makes sense. You know, there are parts that I'm never going to say, hey, this is the best bit of you, Sarah. There are parts that I know are weaknesses still, even if I worked on them. There are parts that I don't really want the world to know about, but I try not to hide too much because it doesn't help to hide. Can I love those even if I don't like them very much? Can I love myself with all of myself being present? And can I recognize that sometimes those parts that I don't like have been incredibly valuable in my life because they've actually pushed me to grow? And so it's not necessarily really even that I want to reject them. So that kind of self-love, which is not, you know, I've got to be in this blissful, out there, unbelievable space all the time, which is difficult to achieve and not very healthy, I find. But this ability to come into myself and know myself and be at peace with myself and be at peace with my life, sometimes being messy, sometimes being amazing, sometimes being somewhere in between those. But inside myself, I feel centered and I feel like I'm me and I'm living the right life and the challenges I have belong to my life. And therefore, I'm really willing to engage with them. So that for me has become way more powerful. It took a lot of searching and enables me to engage with business and enables me to engage with partners because I'm not relying on them to be my solution. If you're in a partnership, like if you already have a relationship, it's how do you navigate that relationship? Because inevitably the other person has different beliefs and different old stuff, old stories, and they can run very strong in a relationship. I mean, again, I feel the more that you have that center within yourself, and for women, it is really important that we have our own source of income wherever possible. There are times in our lives, you know, sometimes when there are young children where it isn't possible. But where possible, really, your relationship with money is very important. And whether it comes, speaking generally, whether it comes through your partner or through, it's always coming from somebody. So your relationship with the people who provide you with money is very important, whether it's a partner or a boss or a client. Fundamentally, we need that relationship. So then we come to this piece. This applies as much with a partner as it does with money. Just imagine the difference between constantly worried and stressed about the relationship compared to relaxed, at ease, and enjoying it. And that really gives you the answer. It's actually more important to be relaxed and enjoy your relationship with your partner, whatever they think about money or anything else, than it is to get really uptight because they don't share the same beliefs as you in some cases. I think this is, and the same with money. Money responds so well when we're relaxed and at ease and enjoying our life, enjoying our relationship with money. But what we tend to do is say, oh, there's something wrong. It's like we're picking on our partner all the time and then expecting them to be really generous and loving towards us. It's like it just doesn't work very well. So we understand these principles. We know them. These are really simple human things that we forget to apply sometimes.
I really felt that and loved that response, that connection with money. When I'm listening to you talk, it's like more than an energy, because you often hear people say money's an energy. It's like more than that. There is that relational aspect with it as well.
I really want to just call out the beauty of it. People say money's just energy. It's just energy. That's so demeaning to money. Look at the power money has on this planet. Is that really just energy? Like it or hate it, it's never just energy. But when you understand that it's an energy of love and that it's actually an energy of connection, and we've done things with it, which probably we've all done things with money that we're not proud of, and our society at large does massive things with money that no one could be proud of. But we can change that when we understand what money is. It connects us in a kind of flow of beauty, actually. When you get to feel the energy, it is so beautiful. And I feel that that makes it very much more than just energy.
Oh, I love that. There's a word in Māori or Hini Awa, and it's the waters that connect the heavens. And yeah, it's sort exactly of that feeling that I'm feeling as you're talking. I'm like, oh, yeah. I adore that sense. I was wondering what your view, because often another thing that I hear when people are talking into this space as practitioners or business people, that the amount that we charge is like a reflection of our self-worth. How does that tie into all of that relational piece with money?
That's not terribly accurate. Our self-worth does play into it, and that's very obvious. Let's say you want to charge $1,000 for something, and that feels quite a lot to you, and you're not very confident. Then when you ask your client for the $1,000, it's like, oh, it's $1,000, but I'll give it to you for $700. You know, we do these tricks. We instantly devalue because we're not confident. But the price of what you're offering is not just about you, and it is absolutely not just about your self-value. It's just that your self-value can diminish your confidence in offering. So the price of something is a negotiation between the seller and the buyer. If the buyer can't afford it, it might be worth all of that money, but if they can't afford it, you don't have a price. So either they're not your client, or you need to have a price that fits. And one of the big problems that we have in this holistic practitioner space is that we're often trying to sell things that are very valuable to people who don't have much money. And you can do that, but then you either need to have lots of people, you're charging less, you have lots of people. And that's why the successful people in that space run courses, because for courses you can charge a lot less, but you have more people. And so you make money that way. But you've got to have more clients. Or if you want to actually make a decent amount of money, you've actually got to give a valuable product to somebody who not only values it for the outcomes they get, but has the financial resources to pay for it and has the confidence. So they also need self-worth. People who don't believe in themselves don't invest, for example, in healing and coaching and things, because it's like, yeah, I really want it, but there's always this but. People who really value their body and their health and their well-being, which many business owners do, they invest in themselves because they know how important it is. And so they do pay. And that was a big lesson for me when I started working with business owners, because before I was scratching around trying to get people to do one session at a time. And suddenly I was selling a 6-month or a 1-year package as a completely different proposition.
I also wondered the relationship to around our nervous system and holding that. How do you see that playing in? Because I feel like sometimes people think our nervous system is a signal of no, or other people it's like this trauma thing that's telling us this or that. How do you see this in your view of money and us calling it in and that sort of thing?
That's an interesting question, because it's not something I think about a lot, just in those particular terms around nervous system. What I experience personally in my own nervous system really comes back to that thing about integrity. When I can feel integrity, a kind of wholeness. So what does that mean? It means that my energy feels comfortable with the decision that I'm making. I read the resonance of things all the time. It's a little bit different from intuition. It's more like the whole energy sensing of the thing. And because I'm very experienced in this, my energy is reading, is this going in a good direction for me? Is this going to support my well-being, my happiness? Is this going to produce good results? Is this aligning with my values? I don't ask those questions consciously, but all of them are kind of held in the field. I'm sure you understand this language. And so that's how I make decisions. And if there's something that, you know, like this feels really good, but that bit there feels cloudy or gray or uncomfortable, I know that there's something that needs to be unpacked there. So when I have that, my nervous system feels comfortable because my whole system is aligned. If there's trauma and that trauma gets triggered, actually that is, you know, there's definitely an alert there. Yes, you know, we all probably have some trauma. But it's not for most of us being triggered all of the time, unless you're really in a very traumatic situation and maybe you're on high alert all the time. And then honestly, you just need healing. You need time and healing to get through that. But assuming that that's not where you're at, I would say any kind of trigger of trauma, or actually any kind of emotional trigger, is always something that at the very least needs to be worked with, which basically tends to say to me that the more we can support our nervous system to feel comfortable and at peace with itself, so that we can rise to pressure and tension. It doesn't mean we never experience tension, but we experience pressure as pressure and we engage with it rather than experiencing pressure as causing a huge amount of stress, which is, you know, a lot of complicated thinking and calculating, which is actually getting in the way of what you're trying to do. So to me, that that's a healthy nervous system. It can handle all the pressures of life, and sometimes they can be considerable. And we can recover quickly when we do get stressed. Then that aligns very much with what I'm talking about with money, because if you have that kind of healthy nervous system, you can have a healthy relationship with money. It's all the same thing.
Does that mean that you would suggest sometimes the healing is preliminary to some of that relational building with money, or is the money something we can tap into straight away?
I teach people to relax. Relaxation is the foundation of the practice, if you like, that I teach. And so I teach that from day one. That absolutely has to come first. What's nice is that the minute you start to relax about money, your relationship with it starts to get better. So the rewards can come quite quickly. Some people are very heady and it's hard for them to relax and it takes longer. That's who I was. It took me years to learn to relax. But most people start relaxing in a couple of days, literally. It makes a difference. And what I found is that at every step that I'm able to relax more deeply with the, you know, generally, as you get more experienced, you have more challenges because you can take on more challenges. It's not that really life gets more difficult. It's that you have more capacity. And so you're willing to do more. So as those challenges come along, that calls me to relax even deeper. And as I do that, results also flow. There's a huge benefit in allowing healing to happen because that will benefit your relationship with money immediately.
Thank you. So I read your book and there was a point in there where you said, was it about being with precise with the amount? And I had trialed it and it was the first and only time, it hasn't worked since, but where I've gotten the exact amount. So I asked for $4,000 and the next day I got it. And I was like, oh my God, like totally blown away. But the day after that, I found 5 cents, which is also your other example. I was just, I thought it was so funny. I was like, this is such an example of both that parameter in action. In the book as well, it speaks about money being as beings or a department or something. Is that still, like, how would you describe that?
It's so fascinating. Yeah, actually, it's come to be more and more my view. So what it describes in the book is that money isn't, you know, I say money's energy. And then I always used to think, oh, that's just kind of like some kind of flow through the ether, you know, it just feels like something, it's very nebulous. And I always used to see energy like that. And I've come more and more in my life to understand that we really are part of a multidimensional universe. It's probably infinite how many dimensions there are. I don't think we can possibly begin to imagine that. But those dimensions are really filled with entities, beings, energies, forms. Every bit of energy has some kind of form. The universe has form, and a planet has form, and a planet is energy as well. And in all the space I've come to recognize, it is full of energy. And some traditional cultures really understand that. I remember meeting somebody who'd broken their leg in some very foreign culture to them. And the local people could see all the beings that immediately came to start healing the leg. It was quite tangible to them. There were all these special beings that appeared and they could see them, you know, as the way we see physical things. And that was a beautiful example for me. So my sense now is that the entire universe is filled with different life forms, way beyond our imagination mostly. But there is a department in there that is what I can call the money department. It's really probably trillions of beings that respond to human wishes and desires. It's actually the energy of manifestation. And what happens is that I say something or you say something like, I would love that thing. It's actually more that your heart and your soul open to something that you want. And in that moment, a wish is lodged, so to speak. It's sent to the department instantaneously. And the moment your heart opens, it doesn't happen when it's like, I really want $4,000 tomorrow. That's heady. And you don't, it doesn't work, and you'll find that. But when it's just really got that heart and soul quality to it, and it's open and simple and clear, it's like that wish gets lodged instantly in the ledger, in the book of wishes, so to speak, that's run by this department of kind of like beings. It's like a bureaucracy or something. And they have very, very strict rules, and they're not allowed to give us things that they know we would really like, but we haven't created that opening for. And they're not allowed to break their rules. And so that's why if we say something like, I'd really like to, I don't know what, buy new, very expensive curtains for my house, but I can't afford it and I'm never going to be able to afford it because people like me never have enough money. They have to put all of that into the ledger. Once curtains can't afford them, and they then have to deliver that constantly once curtains and can't afford them. And so you get this constant, like, oh, I really want new curtains, but I'm never going to be able to afford them. And you continue the story. And they have to keep that until the day when you say, you know what, I really want new curtains. I want to make sure that I've got the money for it. I don't want to do it on my credit card or whatever your conditions are. And you stop saying, but I can't afford it. You might say, I can't do it yet. I can't do it today, but I'm going to. And when we have that energy, I'm going to, that's the energy that they are able to fulfill on. Sometimes it happens the next day, like with you. Sometimes it happens some years later, and some people ask for very, very huge things. But our thoughts and our feelings are literally like a constant flow of instructions, if you like, to life. It's a flow of communication that is directly responded to. And I think it's a really nice way to look at it, even if you don't buy the whole story, to understand how responsive life is to what's going on inside you.
I adore that. And that also pinged the other question that I wondered because of that situation, which was the same few people seem to respond to my precise request to the universe. So it's like certain people that will answer precise ones. Is there anything in that that you have a thought about?
That's really interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting. Is that typically in the form of its particular clients who tend to show up at that time and pay the money? So,
yeah. Only if I'm asking for specifics. If I do sort of the more general without an amount, if it's like, oh, so what my process will tend to be is like, oh, I'm going to New Zealand and I'd love this. So it's sort of this open thing, and then I just wait for the things to come. Yeah, when it's like, oh, I need this, if it's more of a thing that I'm like, or when I was like with that 4,000, I was just, that was me playing. I was like, let's see if this thing really works. Like that was the energy I had with it. When it's a more precise thing from me, that seems to be, yeah, specific people who respond.
So there are certain things that I'm getting a sense of in that. One is obviously if it's money and it's quite precise in that way, it's more likely, not essential, more likely to be a client that becomes the solution. It's almost like the money department can arrange that more easily through a client than they can through some random, you know, sometimes people get tax refunds and all kinds of things happen at exactly the right moment. But that's a little more, if you put yourself in their shoes of this money department, you've got to deliver to you. It's like, how would you do that most easily? Well, if there's a client who's hanging out thinking, oh, I really need to do some more something, then that clicks together. Also, you have a connection with those people. So wherever we have a connection, our messages can reach each other more easily. And we know that, you know, sometimes you think of somebody and they just say, oh, I was just going to call you. We know we have this connection. So it's an extension of that. Only you're thinking, I'm looking for some money here. And they're thinking, I'm looking for some help here. And so the connection works, and it's clearly an easy way to deliver to both of you. If you start to look at the money department like that, it's got to deliver at both ends, not just to you. So it's got to tie up the wishes of other people with the wishes of you. And this to me is, when you start to think about that, I mean, it's obviously a very human way of looking at it, but it shows the remarkableness of life working for every single bit of life at the same time. I find that really fascinating. And just as you serve your clients, the money department serves us as human beings. We serve them in a different way. So there's this kind of constant flow of contribution or of reciprocity throughout life. And I find it helps me to appreciate that so much.
Yeah, I really like that reminder about us serving them too, because as a practitioner, you know and understand the value we get from serving. Like we receive a lot from being able to share, and that reciprocity, keeping money or maintaining or building money. How do you see that calling in process seems to feel more natural to me. Like, oh yeah, yeah. But that aspect of maintaining, is that a different energetic, or is that?
Do you mean like saving?
Yeah, saving.
People often ask this question actually because there's so much talk now about money needs to be in flow, and so they think they should be receiving and spending all the time. And then that's like, oh, how does that go with the idea of saving or investing? But actually, to me, that's a bit of a misunderstanding. Yes, money's always flowing, and money, like the most useless place to put money usually is under your bed. Though there could be times when you might say, yes, it's actually good to have a little bit under my bed because, you know, people feel insecure sometimes around financial systems these days. And so maybe having a bit of cash somewhere can be a useful thing. But generally speaking, when it's just sitting as notes, it's not doing anything. It's saving itself for another day. Usually, like it or not, if you save money in any of the normal ways of saving, you've got it in a bank account, that money is not sitting in your bank account. That money is being used all over the place for other purposes. If you invest, of course, also you're investing in something and you're enabling companies or whatever it is to do their business. So you're contributing to the economy. And to me, actually, it's not something I've been very good at yet. For a while, I was making a lot of money, a lot more than I needed. And I saved all of that. I put it all in different accounts. And that's how we managed to buy a farm. And we wouldn't have been able to buy it otherwise because we wouldn't have had the deposit. So to me, first of all, understand that money is still in flow if you're saving it. So you don't need to just say, well, I have to spend everything that I get. Also, if you think about it, just really simple things. Let's say something happens. Let's say, like recently, I spent a few weeks with my mum. She'd been in hospital and she needed some extra help. And I couldn't get much work done at that time. And it immediately starts to impact the business. So if you've got some savings, you're okay in that situation. If you haven't, you have to work. It's like being a mum and having three kids and having to work to pay the bills every week. And it's really demanding. I think it's really important to save. And I also have a lot of clients who are women in their 60s. I've had women in their 70s and even 80s who don't have enough to live on. And it's awful to see that. And, you know, usually they've got divorced and they've done badly out of it. And they'd never thought that they would need to save. They thought that they were going to be okay for their retirement. And they're not. So saving is a fundamental part of our current culture because our pensions are not really enough for people to live a decent life. So I think we have to take this on and look sensibly. I'm really in favor of each person looking sensibly at your life and making decisions based on your values and your capacity and your potential future. You know, if you die tomorrow, it probably doesn't matter, but if you live for however long, it might matter a lot. And don't just follow what somebody says because they said it, but really suit all advice to who you are and what you need. And be real. Please, please be real. There's far too many people, especially in spiritual and holistic communities, are up in the clouds around money.
Thank you so much. I love that. And I agree with you too around the up in the clouds and the not being grounded around finances. That actually came for me. It was surprising about how much need of these conversations and overcoming my own fear sometimes of talking about it with those people that I'm training, because it was so often the topic that would come up in our supervision or peer-to-peer calls, and that would be the blocks that people would have to actually stepping forward and sharing their gifts. And I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I'm on the journey too, but it's also nice to, I wouldn't probably have even been able to have this discussion like a year ago, because I would be, different things would be pinging off about how can I be a healer and talk about this or whatever stories.
Well, that's also why I told the story at the beginning that I'm not unbelievably rich all the time, that I have ebbs and flows financially as well, because I make the choices I make. I made those choices. Some are good, some maybe not so good, but I have to deal with the consequences and, you know, find my way with that too. And I think it's really important to understand that we are always on the journey, and people with huge wealth have enormous challenges, usually different challenges, but it's a massive responsibility apart from anything else. So I've learned always to really understand that I'm on that journey and that I haven't got all the answers, because most of the answers lie inside you. But having a relationship with money that doesn't cause you stress and anxiety is an enormous piece in it. And yeah, having this kind of friendship and connection with it, it makes such a huge difference. And it frees you then to learn how to do business. And I'm so glad, I just want to say, I'm so glad that you're addressing it, because I know people who teach cohorts of healers in whatever modalities, and they don't teach them how to do business. And they all go out into the world and they have no idea. And they spend all that money and all that time and invested all this knowledge and they can't use it. And I think that's really sad.
Thank you so much. It's been really important to me to merge the two and that practice, but also healing and bringing them together and breaking down everything about stepping, because being seen stuff too can be overwhelming. Could to be like, I'm even going to say I have a business can be hard, let alone even starting to work out the logistics of it for some people.
Yeah, so. I understand. I mean, for years I couldn't, even when I was doing business, I didn't have a picture that I was in business, because the word business was so difficult for me. I actually started being in business long before I recognized it. It's crazy.
It's so crazy when you think about it. On that podcast I was listening to before, you were talking about emotions, and then I guess my language would be the neutrality of the emotions. Like how would you say you do view that? I really loved that welling up of our internal wellspring, I think you said.
Oh, the well of being. Talking about the well of being. Yeah. The well-being arising from the well of being. Yes.
Just a few things around the emotion piece that was pinging me to go, oh, I wonder how you're seeing that at the moment, because sometimes I feel like we do need to feel emotions, but they can also be a big hindrance to sometimes they're not real, like they're this energetic. I would just love you to articulate how you're sitting with that.
Yes, and it's a controversial topic, because a lot of people are very invested in emotions. Actually, the thing that I've found is that if you repress or suppress your emotions, it's really important to learn how to express them and how to feel, first of all. But it's not necessary to stay, you know, that's the first stage. You don't need to stay there forever. And I think a lot of people, and I did this for a while, having grown up in an emotionally repressed culture, being British. And then I got to learn how to express myself very kind of openly. And then it actually got to be a bit too much and it started to become almost inappropriate, but I needed to go through that. What I find in business, and anyone who's a professional will know this, is in a professional situation, you actually have to be neutral. You cannot afford to bring your emotional baggage into a professional relationship. That's not what somebody's buying from you. You can be touched by something as a human, you know, that human touching of your heart and your soul. I actually had a beautiful example, or actually a funny example recently with my mum, and a carer came and my mum said, oh yeah, something like, I don't know, I'm really bored today. And the carer had obviously been taught to be empathetic, and she said, oh yeah, I'm really bored too. And it was kind of like trying to match my mother's emotions in a really inappropriate way. She was very sweet and she didn't know what she was doing, but it wasn't for her to bring her emotional state into a professional context. And I think that's really important. I find in business, if I get emotional about things, all that happens is I become less effective. But that's not to say, okay, so I've got to stamp out all my emotions. There are things that happen are more than my capacity so far. I've learned a lot about how to manage myself and how to be incredibly neutral about situations. This is happening. Okay, how am I going to respond? Let's not create a drama around it. It's happening. We've run out of money. We don't have enough money to pay this. It's like, not, oh my God, what's happening? It's like, okay, what are we going to do? Completely different response. But sometimes, whoever you are and however much of that you've done, something hits you that's just beyond where you are. And then you do, I do get emotional then, but I know the direction I want to go. And I know that what I need to do is find a way to make peace with the situation, because it is happening, to know that the uncomfortable feelings in me are actually energy. They are simply energy moving through me. It might feel unbelievably stuck, but it's never actually stuck. It might just be moving slowly. It is always moving. And that when I remember these things, I free the energy to move on. Whereas when I go into that emotional thing, I actually hold the energy inside me and I just repeat it. I just grow it and grow it because I pay so much attention to what's wrong that I'm growing what's wrong. And so my job is to turn my attention to where am I going? Who am I becoming? Because whatever's happening now was created in the past energetically. I'm not going to change that. You know, it's like, yes, at a certain level, I can change the past. I know that. That's quite advanced. But fundamentally, now is a really important moment because it determines what's going to happen in the future, or influences what's going to happen in the future. And if I wrap all of now into something that feels terrible, I'm actually kind of growing that for my future. So I think it takes tremendous discipline as you get better at this to learn how life really works. If we understood that more, we would not have the emotional dramas that we have. We would let life kind of go along. I think even with death, you know, death is a part of life, and we turn it into a drama more than it needs to be. It doesn't mean, you know, you can experience loss. But I think we build stories around these things that are not true and are not helpful. So that's why I talk quite a lot about emotions and I upset people all the time. But I want people to know that there is a kind of peace that is possible that is way more enjoyable than being excited about your next client. And it's way more effective. It's like if you really want to impact the world, you want to be effective, not excited.
Oh, effective, not excited. Please say more.
I don't know if you've ever had this experience. Many people like us have had this experience where, you know, somebody says, oh, I'm really interested in doing some work with you. And they're like, yay, I've got a client, but they haven't paid yet. And something happens in that moment. You can probably feel this energetically. It scatters the energy, it disperses the energy, and very often they don't come through to payment. And I learned from my book to hold this very steady energy when someone's indicating that they want to buy something from me, to hold a really steady energy that's totally open to them not buying. So there's no force, there's no push, but it's creating a kind of attraction to them buying if it's right for them, and that kind of holds them in that beam of attraction. And this is not a manipulative thing. I don't do it to manipulate people. I would never do that. But it's a respectful thing to them to enable them to make a steady, solid decision to do something they want to do. If I get excited in that process, almost always I lose it. And another example, a friend of mine who's in corporate sales, he said, never get angry and never get frustrated because you'll lose the sale. So excitement is a positive emotion, anger and frustration are negative emotions. But if you want to be effective, it's just being professional, being present, engaging all of your energy so you're not just in your mind. These are the things that make us effective. And you see it most clearly in sales because the outcome is so tangible. But it's just the same if you're trying to solve a problem in your business or if you're trying to help a client solve a problem. To be really present, because you know how it is, somebody can heal and then it can get worse again. And you have to track with people. The healing journey is not usually just like Jesus said. Sometimes it is, and that's wonderful. But even when it is, sometimes those people can come back 6 months or a year later and the cancer's come back or whatever because they didn't change their life. Being that steady professional who can ride all the bumps with your clients, with your business, and then with your life, which can impinge on your business if it gets messy. To me, that's what makes us really effective and impactful. We want to make a difference in the world. That's how we make a difference in the world.
I really like that. Thank you so much. Is there anything?
It took me a lot of time and a lot.
Yeah, it might sound easy, everyone, but it's definitely a journey.
It's definitely, yeah. But it's worth whetting your appetite because then you start looking for it, you know.
Part of what I love about these conversations is sometimes it's like one sentence or one thing that opens something for someone to really ground. Oh, like I can look at it that way. Like it might not be, there might be an hour of whatever, and then they'll hear one thing and go, like that really shifts something.
And something that's also really important, often people start to sense these things, but everyone around them is at a different stage. So they may be surrounded by people who are needing to express their emotions, but they're beginning to sense that there's something better. And then if they don't ever hear that that's okay, they keep reverting back to what's around them. I've experienced that. And the people or the frameworks that have showed me, no, this is going forward, Sarah. And what you keep reverting to is actually holding you back now. You don't need that anymore. Because, you know, there really are levels of development here. And what we need at one stage, often it's the opposite at the next stage. And then it'll go almost opposite again, but a much more evolved level. So it's quite hard to navigate sometimes when you're transitioning from one stage to another. So I think it's important to have those little pointers. It's like, it's okay to be feeling like this.
Do you mind if I ask?
I'm fine. I love it. I'm very happy.
I'm glad. Something I've navigated. So I'm Māori. My dad's Māori. My mum's non-Māori. And that cultural sort of hold, it's like I've had to double do work sometimes, like unhook from the Western views and that things I learned in school. And then some of that cultural work as well about like, what's my integrity in this as well? Is there a different process you see in different cultures, or is it the same for everyone?
In principle, for everyone, we have to find our own integrity. But the more I learn, the more I realize that so clearly, while there are kind of fundamental principles of life, my way of living, my culture, my way of listening, my way of understanding is my way, and it can change. My husband is Bosnian and grew up in a tiny village in a very different kind of culture. I mean, it's a European culture, but I grew up my dad was in the Navy, so it's kind of government. My mum was an artist. I went to Cambridge University. So in a way, I grew up in an intellectual elite, we could say. It's so different. And every now and then things come through to me because I notice how things that I value from my culture, genuinely value, like my ability to make a contribution, I think is a genuinely valuable thing. And I don't want to say that's wrong. You know, I should be living in a completely different way. But it's only one way. And I more and more see that things that I could very easily judge from my culture, they're actually different in another culture. They're actually just completely different activities somehow. I don't think that I will probably ever really know what's going on inside anyone else, except to the extent that I can be interested. And then I never really know. In a way, every one of us is in our own culture, but then we're in cultural patterns that we've grown up with, and then we're exposed to different ones, and then we start learning healing and holistic cultures, which bring their own set of beauty and baggage, we could say. So in a way, the whole integrity thing that I've referred to a couple of times is for me constantly coming back not to my culture, but to my center. And who am I as a human being in this moment? What's my direction? I find it important to have a sense of direction. This is forward, this is backwards for me. And that's at a very pragmatic level as well. What do I want to do with my business? What do I want to do with my life? You know, do we want to stay living where we're living, or do we want to go somewhere else? These practical choices. Yeah, integrity with yourself, with all of the different cultural touch points, I think is probably one of the most important things we're doing as human beings at the moment. And will continue to be so, you know, with the AI and technology culture coming so strongly, that's pushing us from another angle. And then there's going to be a lot of financial turbulence that's pushing us from another cultural angle. And social change gives us an opportunity to check into our values much more deeply. So it's the right time for us to be asking these questions.
Yeah, you mentioned something as well when I was listening to the podcast before about feeling people's thought patterns almost and being able to cleanse that. And do you feel like those cultural thoughts coming in, that we can feel that and that is directing us? Or is it like, sorry, I've gone a bit.
You know, there are people who say there's one mind, so we're all really the same mind. I mean, that's not an expression that I would use, but I understand it. I have had experiences. I remember walking through London. I was starting a business there that was all about energy. So I was all in this energy world. And my mind was so full. And I realized, hold on a moment, these are not my thoughts. I'm in a huge city full, you know, millions and millions of people thinking and being emotional and navigating their lives. And all of that is in the airwaves here. And, you know, I live on a farm and it's really peaceful there. And that stuff's not happening there. I drive into Brisbane and it's like, oh, but for me, it's quite a confronting experience because I'm not there all the time and I live in this peaceful energy world. And of course, at the same time, that's happening at a global level. And who knows what's happening at a universe level, all those little beings organizing our money, like they're all sending out vibrations as well, aren't they? So we could go forever with this. So I had an experience yesterday. I was in a meeting with somebody who's very close to somebody else. And it was like that other person is present in this meeting as well. It was a challenging one because we were talking about that other person. It's like it brought that person into the meeting for me energetically in a way that I hadn't quite been prepared for. I mean, this is the front, these are the frontiers of our knowledge in a way, and different cultures have different access to different parts, but no culture has all of it.
Mm.
We can share.
Thank you so much. I adore that. And thank you so much for me finding it. I don't know.
I remember maybe I sent a message.
Yeah. I was laying on the hammock outside and listening and I was like, oh my God. Like just it was so good. So yeah, I felt those interwebs. Yeah,
it's very suitable for people who can feel energy. Because the book itself speaks our language.
Yeah, it really opened something up. It was just like, oh, that was the missing piece or the something. It just opened that extra thing. I was like,
yeah. And you'll find it goes deeper and deeper. I come back to it time and time again. And whenever I get a bit stuck in some way in my relationship with money, I find that it's always in there. I usually have to find it for myself. And then I go and look and it's like, oh, it was there all along. But, you know, you actually have to get it in yourself anyhow.
I really appreciate your time and your thoughts and everything. Is there anything sitting with you that's arisen from our talk that you would want to share with everyone?
Really just appreciation of you and what you're doing, because I can feel the quality of it because I'm, you know, I am a very sensory person in that way. And the importance of this kind of work. And one of the things that you've really brought out for me is the importance for women, whether they feel confident about business or not. Like so many women come to me saying, I want to make money, but I don't want to deal with business, essentially. I want to be a healer. I want to be a this. I want to be that. I don't want to have to deal with business. And I find it really challenging because if you want money, you have to deal with business. Even if you want money from your husband to run your household, a household is a business. So I feel it's so important to unpack this money story for us as human beings. And very interesting because indigenous and original cultures, there are some very tricky stories around money. And some of those cultures have had money. They've had, and all of them have the energy of money flowing through. They might not have cash. But exchange and reciprocity is so fundamental in human life and in nature life on this planet, which we're a part of. And women, it's just so important to break down these barriers and these new beliefs that are just as unhelpful as the old ones and get real about money and be able to relate with it, be able to talk about it, be able to work with it and to be able to create with it, because we long to be creative in some way or other, whether our life is our creation or our business or our healing. Money's a part of it. So yeah, I very much appreciate both this opportunity to speak, but especially just the way that you're approaching it. And I'm sure that people are benefiting from that very much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Is there anything, so I'll put the link to your book and that sort of thing, but is there anything else you're doing at the moment or you want to direct us towards that? That's sitting with you.
I'll just mention what we do because there may be some people who are really interested. The central program I run is called Wealth Streams. And it's actually looking at four currencies that any conscious business owner or conscious business person, I think, needs to engage with. So money is one of them. Time is one of them, because time becomes very important as a currency, if you like. You can invest in time and you can waste time. Relationships become very important if we want to run a good business that makes a positive impact, and wisdom. Making wise decisions comes all the way back to money, really. And so my kind of signature program is called Wealth Streams, and it is teaching people how to grow those four currencies. So reading the book is by far the best place to start. But sometimes people just say, oh, I really want to learn this stuff. And it feels like it's very complementary to what you're doing. I think it's worth mentioning.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Sarah. Yeah, I'll connect all those things. And so I'm so, so, so grateful for your time. There's just one thought I often, when I'm doing a healing session, if I'm feeling something shift, I say a sentence and I feel to say that it's whatever we need to clear, or whatever's been arising in us that we can clear or is destined to clear today, we ask it. It wraps up, shifts out, moves on and transfers to wisdom, and I'll add money in there too. So thank you so much.
Thank you
for your time.